I'm Gab, he's Jules. It is a wet and horrendous.
Oh, you didn't like today. You didn't like today.
It's horrible. This is what happens when we have to move the show to Tuesday. Look, I am still wet. That is how horrendous it is outside.
Yeah.
Welcome to 2022. Anyway, we have a big show for you because obviously La Liga is back.
Yes.
Manchester United losing. But there's one place to start, and it's Chelsea and Liverpool. And Jules, I have to come out and say this off the top about the game. I thought it was a very entertaining game. I thought there were obviously more than two moments of sublime skill.
Yeah.
Also a big refereeing mistake, in my opinion. But remember last time we were all sort of grumpy and saying about, no, they're playing too many games and so we get bad games. And we did get a run of bad games.
Yes, we did.
Were we wrong when all of a sudden we get this really good game, really intense game?
We were not wrong. It's just that when you put Chelsea and Liverpool against each other in a game that they both have to win really to stay as close as possible to Man City, then this is what happens. It helps when you've got a Liverpool midfield that can't control anything and it's pretty much basketball. It goes through, you know, they just cannot control anything for their lives. And on the other hand, for Chelsea, with all the Lukaku controversy and everything, I think it was a game where they had so much intensity and energy to bring into the game that they had to go for it, very much so, especially at 2-0 down, which I think we were all shocked to see those two goals scored very quickly by Liverpool.
We'll get to Lukaku, and we'll get to, I mean, for me, it was a really big deal that Mane wasn't sent off. I think it's 100% a red card, and we're going to get into that more. But we both agree on that, and it might have been a different game without Mane on the pitch.
Oh, massively. After 6 seconds or 10 seconds? Yeah.
But the two goals. I know you love the technical ability, and for those who don't know, Jules played at a far higher level than most journalists. To me, when I look at the whole thing, I liked the Salah goal more. But you're going to tell me, I'm guessing, the Kovacic one is technically far more difficult to execute, right?
Yeah, not far more. It's more difficult because he's going backwards and the ball is coming quickly to him. Then Salah, who's controlling the ball, and then it's a piece of skill and the shimmy is amazing. And then he gives the eyes to Mendy, which is great, which is fantastic. They're just two very difficult goal to score technically in two very different styles. Then you pick, I guess, the one you find the most spectacular. If you're a dribbler, if you're more of a guy like, I don't know, if you're more a midfielder and not as gifted technically than Mo Salah, you pick the Kovacic one. You know,
what you're talking about, the Kovacic one, is just the trajectory that it takes. Because I would have assumed, I know he's going backwards, but I would assume textbook, you would want to keep the trajectory a lot flatter and try to get your body forward when you pull these off, which is very difficult to connect.
It's just he didn't have the time. Because he was going backwards, the ball arrived so quickly, he basically hit it almost in line and as straight as possible to put it there. The Salah shimmy on Marcos Alonso is just a pure Steph Curry football movie.
I think that's what I love the Salah one, is the elements to it. Obviously receiving the ball, freezing Marcos Alonso like that. I mean, Marcos Alonso, you know, people criticize him defensively because he's a big boy, so he's not very quick. But I think what also means he's very aware of his limitations. We're very aware of what he needs to send off, to stay off and whatever, right? And the way you can just kind of stop and go like that, I thought was just brilliant. And then, you know, not 100% he's going to put the ball across the goal. But no,
it doesn't. And it's just the speed of it. You know, if you think, and again, sometimes on television or even when we are at stadiums, you watch the game and you say, oh, you know, I could do this. I could be there and do this. And this time at Stamford Bridge, you know, Gabby, we so close to the pitch, we're just behind the dugout. And the pace of the game, it's been a very long time since I've seen a game played with so much speed and intensity. But not just intensity of like, you know, you run up and down. Just every time you had the ball, you had to think so quickly, do things quickly, whether it was a one-touch pass or you controlled the ball and piece of skill and then a pass, whatever you had, because it was so frantic. And for Salah and even Kovacic, all of them, to do all those things, and there were some missed passes and missed controls. It was not perfect by far. But it was just, I think, ridiculous. And now you see and you're like, okay, this is why they are so good. This is why they are the best.
Yeah, and I think from the perspective of the two managers, both coming off disappointing performances as well, coming out and really kind of getting the message through that, guys, this really, really matters. I thought that was big.
No, it was, yeah.
Also big, obviously, was Thomas Tuchel's call to leave out Romelu Lukaku. As we record this on Tuesday morning, the understanding is that they spoke to each other again on Monday.
Yep.
And the vibe is very positive. He's not going anywhere. They've essentially kissed and made up.
Yep.
Tuchel's going to speak later today as we record this. We'll hopefully get more information. Again, we're going to get pretty granular on this later. But the long and short of it is, to me, this whole thing was just very bizarre in the sense that the interview was recorded a lot earlier.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really directed at, it was directed at Inter fans, not at anything else. What I found interesting was that Tuchel made the decision. We'll get into whether the decision was right or wrong later. Tuchel made the decision effectively by leaving him out. He's saying there's too much noise. It's kind of like you're not criticizing, you're not hitting back at him for it, but you obviously are because you're leaving him out. That Tuchel made that decision when, if he'd wanted to, and I think other managers might have done this, other comms experts might have done this, they could have said, well, we're not happy, we're going to talk to him privately, we're going to rip him a new one, but in public we're just going to say, oh, well, it's normal that he's unhappy if he doesn't play, and it's normal that one day he wants to go back to Inter. Let's not make a big deal out of it. Let's just play this game and move on. And there's a lot of people, including our colleagues Craig and Burley and Frank Leboeuf, that felt that that's what the club should have done rather than giving it so much oxygen.
Yeah, I understand that point on one hand. It's just that, you know, he talked a bit about Chelsea in the interview. Tuchel felt that he dropped him to sort of protect the dressing room, that he was not happy with the interview. I think when the rules... and you break the rules, you have to be sanctioned like others have been before.
Let's roll on with Lukaku.
We disagree a bit on Lukaku, right?
We disagree. I want to put out a timeline so people have a sense of how this happened, because I think it is important, again, to remind people about this. So the interview took place about 3 weeks earlier. It was right around, I think, December 10th or 11th, right around the Zenit game, which Lukaku actually started. It was done by Matteo Barzagli, who's one of Sky Italia's transfer guys. So it was clearly set up, and I don't think I'm revealing any secrets here.
Yeah, go on.
With Federico Pastorello, who's a guy who looks after Lukaku and does, he's an intermediary, does a lot of business, also looks after
Conte
quite big, and
whatever. He's a big agent.
And the interview was designed to be, supposedly, the line that they're spinning is, Lukaku had a great time in Milan.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't if you're a good person? But, and he didn't like the way he left. He left Inter. The interview is actually...
That he left in the summer.
Yeah, he left Inter in the summer.
So he was so disappointed that he waited all that time.
Yes.
To say a proper goodbye.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a half-hour interview. Obviously, a half-hour that went to air. And he talks at length about how bad he felt about leaving. He says a couple things which we'll get into later, which I don't think make any sense whatsoever. But in the course of it, he touches upon Chelsea. And he says those phrases which now everybody has heard, which I think were the heart of the problem. I think it's that, not so much the idea that I want to go back to Inter one day. Because you know it's not going to happen in the near future. Which is that he's not happy with the situation because he's not playing.
At the time of the interview,
At the time of the interview, that was true.
Yeah.
Not happy with the situation because he's not playing, but I'm a professional. I need to work harder and get back into the side, right?
Yeah.
So Sky Italia decide to hold, or the interview doesn't get held. It doesn't run at the time. There's different versions about why they held it until now. I think it was actually simply they wanted a big... I think they wanted like a big chunk of programming and a story at a time of year when there is no Serie A, when he would have the full attention to Inter fans. I think it was actually his advisors who said, let's hold it. Obviously, in the interim, he starts playing and he starts scoring. He starts his first game against Brighton, was it?
Yeah.
And then the one before, he comes off the bench and scores in the 3-1 win. So this interview comes out on Friday. We get sort of excerpts from it. On Saturday, we get the whole interview. The Friday excerpts are about Chelsea. The rest of the interview really has very little to do with Chelsea. Tuchel finds out about this on Friday night, and he's surprised by what he learns. He asks for more information. He gets more information on Saturday. At some point, you may know this better than I do, because I'm not 100% sure if... I think he had a conversation with Lukaku on Saturday and again on Sunday. Yeah. Those conversations lead him to... After the first conversation on Saturday, he decides... It obviously didn't necessarily go as well as Tuchel might have thought, or he wasn't necessarily satisfied with what he heard.
Yeah, yeah.
But he says, I'm playing Liverpool in 24 hours. I have a problem. Do I want to spend my time and my mental energy researching this, researching what I need to do? So he sounds out some senior players. I think it's four senior players in the squad. Interestingly, all older players, more experienced players. And he says, would it be a problem? From what I was told, the approach is, I'm thinking that this is a big distraction for us. Is it a problem if we would leave him out of the team?
It's something that was spoken a lot within the dressing room too, what he said, you know. And I just don't think as a club, as a manager, even as a teammate, you know, is good for the life of your dressing room if someone does an interview when he's not happy, and someone especially as big as Lukaku. And I think that's why I can see the I had to protect the game, the club, the dressing room narrative from Tuchel. I get that. Maybe you could say they're big boys, they're all professionals, some of them have been pros for 20 years, blah blah blah, and they don't need protection. They know this is what happened. It happens in football. They don't need protection. He could have played, and you could have buried the story very easily by saying we had a chat, timing was wrong, he kind of regrets what he said, let's move on. I also think that in a way he sort of broke the rules of like not publicly talking about your manager, even if that was not the aim of the interview, there was still a little like, and I think there was a lot lost in translation, by the way, between Italy and via France and England. However, there was still a bit of like, I'm not happy with the tactics, which means like, I'm not so happy with the manager. You can, but that's the thing.
But it's not what he said.
No, but I know, but he still talked about the tactics. So, you know, he said it's a different formation. I have to adapt. I have to stay professional. It's not good if someone like Lukaku said, I have to stay professional. Well, you don't even, you should not even say it.
So this is I take your point on all that. And I just want to make this very, very clear. I think Tuchel's a very, very bright guy. And the conclusion, this is purely speculation, what I'm about to say. I think something else happened on Saturday or Sunday, or there's something else going on. Because I still think that 100% the rational thing to do on Saturday, the thing that would have been best for Chelsea, knowing what we know, if there is nothing else, so that's the caveat, if there's nothing else, if there's something we don't know, the rational thing would have been, let's not give the story more oxygen. Let's bury the story here, right? Let's come out and say, well, there's no problem whatsoever. Of course he wants to go back to Inter one day. He had a great time there. Of course he's not happy when he's playing. I don't want players who are happy just collecting a fat paycheck when they're not playing. Besides, it's irrelevant. He started the last game. He's now fully fit. He's playing. And if you go and do that, right, I think, and obviously, again, you can consult with your senior leaders in the dressing room. That's the message that comes across. These guys are with Lukaku every day. They know what his personality is. They know what he's like. And then you either play him, start him, or don't start him against Liverpool. It doesn't really matter. You do whatever you think is best from a technical perspective, right? He chose not to do that. And because Tuchel is a rational guy, I think, far more rational and far less emotional than other people, and I'm not saying this because of the stereotype of the German. Jurgen Klopp is German too, and he's mega emotional, right? I suspect that something else happened. Maybe the conversation on Saturday with Lukaku didn't go well. Maybe he was taken aback. Maybe he said, I need to find out more about this.
I think there's two things. The first one is that I think this was a way as well for Tuchel to maybe reestablish his authority because things have been a bit tough for him in the last 4 weeks with points dropped, especially at home, no good performances. Maybe this was a way of, like, he lacks control. This is why he was missing in Paris a lot. I think he lacks the control, and this was a way also to say, like, hey, I'm in control here. I want to drop my best player or most expensive player. I can do that. Watch me. And he does.
No, and importantly, he does it without saying, I'm dropping Lukaku as punishment for the unauthorized interview. He simply says, this created a big distraction.
Yeah.
And so I'm putting him to one side. So you're punishing without saying, that part is clever.
Yeah, there's a way back then. You know, you just say like, it was disturbing for this game. And you know, I think there's also, and someone said that to me on Sunday, he didn't know what reaction the fans would get. Imagine you start Lukaku and the fans are not happy. The whole of Stamford Bridge. Or maybe it would have been a bit divided, but still most of them. What's the reaction? Is that also negative, a bit negative and a bit of negativity for the team? That Lukaku gets booed, for example, when he comes out on the pitch to warm up? You know, that they show that they're not happy with him? You don't know. You don't know how they would have reacted had he started.
I wouldn't want a manager who makes decisions based on that and whose team is going to be that affected by it. I've heard that theory put around. I just don't buy it. I think it would have been minimal part. I think fans are intelligent enough to know what's going on. They know that Chelsea haven't played well in the stretch. They know that their most expensive player didn't start for that long stretch. And I think a lot of people are also asking why. Why is he not playing? Why do we need to see this Timo Werner, Havertz freak show up front when we have this guy here? Is he fit? Is he not fit? How is he fit for 15 minutes, fit to play against
Fenerbahce? Yeah, but they also understand that the punishment was to be dropped.
But then he didn't come. But I'm just putting these layers out because I think it's more complex.
But Pep Guardiola doesn't say why he drops Foden and Grealish when we all know that it's because they went out when he said no one goes out this week. We know why Arteta drops Aubameyang.
You know, Arteta told us.
But he said there was a disciplinary...
Right, and then the club leaked what it was. And the exact same thing.
In that case, you don't even need to. We know it's the interview. Tuchel doesn't have to say it's because the interview.
Yeah, I think they're slightly different.
No, they are, but it's still a sanction every time where rules have been broken.
I think they're different. They're different situations, right? Personally, but on Monday they get back. He goes. He trains. Supposedly trains well. He's not there, obviously, on Sunday in the game.
No, because where all the other injured. So when you're injured at Chelsea or where you're suspended, you sit behind the bench, behind the dugout. So you've got Tuchel and his staff. Then you've got the rest of the staff, like physio and stuff, and then the subs. Then the subs again, and after that you've got
Ben Chilwell.
Well, yeah. So you've got Timo Werner who's injured. Right. You know, Chilwell didn't go to the game because
it's not 100%.
Lukaku wasn't there. Maybe he was in a box if he has a box somewhere.
But. It's not 100% clear to me, at least. I mean, if somebody may know different why he wasn't there and whether the club asked him not to be there at all.
Don't know, but he said to Tim Howard, didn't he? It's hot. It's like clearly things were heating up on Sunday, and maybe that's why he was not there. And, you know,
so. Regardless, on Monday, he trains well, has a conversation. We expect, everybody's reporting this later today when Tuchel speaks, that it's going to be over. You think, you told us earlier off air, you think there's a good chance he might start in the League Cup against Spurs.
Yeah, I was told the punishment was just one game.
So, I still have a lot of questions here, okay? I think that genuinely, they're going to try to make it work at this stage because, frankly, let's be clear. Lukaku doesn't have other options, right? He's not going back to Inter, not on loan or whatever. He makes way too much money. Chelsea posted losses of, like $145 million recently. You know, they can't swallow this, take somebody else. Also, and I'm sorry, but look at Chelsea's other strikers.
You've got no...
You have Timo Werner has scored one goal more than Julian Lawrence for Chelsea this season.
Yeah.
And he's played more than you.
Which I'm a bit disappointing.
I know. Havertz has scored two goals.
Yeah.
Werner is a center forward, but he's certainly not a Lukaku-type center forward.
Nope.
Havertz is not a center forward. I don't know what position the guy's going to be in the future. Maybe he can learn the position, but whatever.
Yeah.
Other people who played up front, Christian Pulisic, again, not his best position, not his role.
No.
We saw a little bit of Hudson-Odoi up front, simply because he can run.
Yeah.
But again, that's not necessarily... So you need him.
Yeah,
and for all the talk that, Lukaku's been bad, he's been a flop. Well, you know what? Lukaku started 8 games for Chelsea. 5 he came off the bench in the Premier League. And he scored 5 goals, right? Lukaku alone has more goals than, before Sunday, had more goals than Pulisic, Werner, and Havertz combined.
Yeah.
Right? This is the reality.
Yeah.
Right? On a team that needs goals, this is what the guy provides.
Completely.
You're locked into him for a long-term contract. You need to make it work. And I think by all accounts, he wants to make it work. What I'm interested in, though, is what I'm interested in Lukaku about him is actually, though, I think there was a real level of honesty in what he said. And I'm wondering if there's something, I understand from Chelsea's perspective, I mean, we in the media and the punditocracy, we always complain when people aren't honest.
Yeah.
Lukaku had no reason whatsoever to come out and try to repair relationships with Inter fans. He had none.
No.
He had no reason other than wanting to do this, other than wanting to give up an hour of his time to go and address them.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in so doing, to me, that means something.
Yeah,
to me, that means
that
this is a guy who had a genuine connection. And I think that is something that we should be respecting and not mocking. He's not doing this because he wants to go back to Inter to make even more money. Because let's face it, Inter cannot afford him.
No.
They committed to other players. It's not going to happen for a long time, right?
Yeah.
I think that has to be the starting point. This guy did something because he wanted to do something meaningful out of love, out of genuine emotion.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, he did it in an extraordinarily clunky, ham-fisted, cack-handed way.
And in frustration, because the only few moments where he talks about Chelsea, you could sense the frustration that he would have had at the time when things were not going great for him because he was coming back from injury, not playing much, all of that.
Now, on top of that, whatever goal he wanted to reach with Inter fans, he didn't reach.
That backfired.
It really backfired. One of the stupidest things he said in the interview, which, all right, maybe you are being honest, but that doesn't reflect well on you. He said that, oh, no, well, look, we both know Inter sold him because Inter had to raise money, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they were going to become insolvent, right? That's why Hakimi left. That's why Conte left. That's why Lukaku left, right?
Exactly.
So, but instead he says, oh, I didn't leave because Conte left. And obviously, had a great relationship with Antonio Conte. I left because I wanted a new contract.
Which means more money.
Which always means more money.
Always.
Now, think about this. You move to Inter. You sign a 5-year deal. You're the second highest paid player in Serie A after Cristiano Ronaldo, maybe somebody else, but still, it's a ton of money.
Yeah.
You know the team are hemorrhaging money and they cannot afford it. You've got 3 years to run.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, you say, hey guys, let's give me a new contract. That doesn't reflect well on you. That makes you look.
No. And then you said, oh, you don't give me another. Okay, I'm off.
With 3 years left on your deal.
Exactly.
Are you serious?
I know.
And that's why I'm not surprised Inter Ultras put up that banner, which basically says, you know, it's not about the guy who runs away when it starts raining. It's about the guy who stays during the storm.
Exactly.
Well done to them, because that is the mentality. I really want to like Lukaku. I really want to like his sentiments. But I'll tell you what. You are being really, really badly advised.
Man, if he loved that club so much, take a pay cut, stay. Show that you can help the club because you love it so much, and then they will love you forever.
Yeah.
Instead of saying like, hey, can I get a 25% pay rise?
Or don't take a pay cut. You've made enough money.
Oh, yeah. But if you really wanted to help,
do that.
They would not have sold you.
That's right. I think fans can see through that.
But I'm
wondering, though, what is the confusion that's going on in this man's head that he thinks people want to hear that? That, oh, if the club had renewed my contract, I would have stayed. You had 3 years left. They don't need to renew your contract.
So that you could see why this would wind up.
But I mean, I'm assuming that he was told that he was advised to say stuff like this. So I'm wondering what kind of Muppet show is advising Romelu Lukaku.
And who is advising him to say like, oh, so then I thought, well, I would love to play for Real Madrid, Bayern, and Barcelona. When you said, Chelsea,
said,
I don't even care.
I thought those clubs would come in for me. Which again,
but they didn't come.
But also, Romelu, come on, man. You're an intelligent guy. Real Madrid have a center forward. His name is Karim Benzema. He's a Ballon d'Or candidate.
And they're trying to sign Mbappe.
Bayern have a center forward. His name is Robert Lewandowski. He was a Ballon d'Or candidate. Barcelona couldn't hang on to Lionel Messi and had no money and were functionally insolvent, worse than Inter. So you really thought those clubs were going to come in for you?
I know. And then put yourself into Chelsea fans' shoes now, reading this. And of course, then he said, oh, and then Chelsea came. They were not there at that time. Okay, again, it's too clunky. You're playing for Chelsea now and you're saying, oh, I would have loved to leave for Real Madrid, to leave Inter, to go to Real, Barca, or Bayern. How would that Chelsea feel as a club, the fans there, everybody? It feels like you don't want to be there because that was not in your plans.
Well, I think, again,
the whole thing was very
clumsy. The opportunity at Chelsea only came along later in the summer.
I know, but clumsy. He still said that I wanted Real, Bayern, or Barca. It's not good, man. It's too clumsy for someone who's so intelligent. That's why I didn't get. And I could.
Because he was told that this is. He was told that Chelsea. He said he didn't realize that Chelsea was a possibility. But again, you watch the Champions League. You know Giroud's not staying. You know Tammy Abraham's not going to start. You know Werner, with all due respect, is terrible. So, or has been performing terribly, to be fair. You know Chelsea have got to be a possibility, right? You should have known that.
I know.
He doesn't come across honest, and some people I can understand, but with Lukaku, for me, it's disappointing because I don't. I think he's a genuine guy. So whatever. Enough Lukaku.
Yeah.
Let's talk Liverpool. And let's talk about the decision. I did change it. We're both in agreement. It's 100% a red card, right?
Yeah.
Do we also agree that had this occurred in minute 80, he would have given it?
Yeah.
Is that the reason he didn't give it?
Yeah. 100%. And I think
he didn't want to spoil the game.
Exactly. And we all love those games to be 11v11, to have the great players on the pitch. But if you go like this, and Jamie Carragher, who we both really love, said like, oh, it was not really with the elbow. It doesn't matter. It's his arm straight into Azpilicueta's face. I mean, I saw Edouard Mendy after the game. He said, listen, Sadio is my brother. You know, we're compatriots. They share the same private jet to go to Senegal for the African Cup of Nations. He said it was a red card every day. Should have not been on the pitch.
I think Mane knew that. The reason VAR did not intervene here.
You have to explain to me why.
Yeah, I think it is this weird dysfunction. And again, I don't want to keep picking on referees. We're going to talk about VAR later as well in the Arsenal City game. There's this sense, right? And I think it was also really guided by this idea. The commentary, I watched it on TV in this country. They're like, oh, well, you know, in the City game, right? When they call him over to the VAR, oh, and you know what that means? It's going to be overturned. It shouldn't mean that. It shouldn't mean you're automatically going to overturn it. I want the referee, right, in this game to go look at it again and stick to his decision or overturn it.
I know.
And I'm okay with it. Because you know what? If he comes out, he is possibly, you know, I wrote that he's considered one of the best English referees. Well, you can disagree with me that you can say he's rubbish, but he's still considered to be one of the best referees, right? I want him to look at it and say, okay, I, one of the best English referees, look at this, and I think it's not a red card. And if he does that, then I'm okay with it. But give him another chance, at least.
I know.
You know, to
but he should. I think even if I think by himself, he should have said, you know what? Let me go and have a look. He doesn't need to for VAR to say go and have a look. He could say like, you know, I need to go and have a look. Because
and it would be humble. It would be humble if people did this. But we've gotten into this stupid idea where somebody said, oh well, remember originally they didn't even have on-field reviews, right?
Yeah.
Originally it was like, oh no, well it's clear and obvious, so there's no debate. No, I want the experienced guy on the pitch making the decision. Because, you know, he's human. Maybe he didn't see it as well as he thought he did.
Yeah.
Maybe he's sitting there right now having reviewed it and says, man, I really should have sent him off.
Exactly. So early in the game that maybe he's not into the game and he just got like, he got surprised. I think we were all surprised. Tuchel was fuming like I've rarely seen him. You know, more than, for example, when VAR reviewed the Kovacic goal for that potentially offside, where he lost his shizzle completely on that, which was really funny. But you can understand his point of view. And I can tell you that being so close to the two benches, Pep Linders was very, very quiet, you know, when that happened. But you know, as you would be like, no, it's not. He just kept a low profile and said, like, let's hope that this goes on and it's only a yellow and nothing changes. Because he knew.
Okay. So a word on Liverpool for me, because I am befuddled by Liverpool in the sense that I predicted that the wheels would come off a long time ago, and they have it, and they're still there, and they're still fighting. And in this game, when nothing was working for them, if you go back and you look at the highlights and you count the number of really big saves that Edouard Mendy had to make, Liverpool could have scored 4 or 5 goals.
Yeah, easily.
Easily.
Yeah.
This, despite one of the worst performances from a midfield trio that I've seen in a long time, incredible. This despite the jitters at the back, this despite no Robertson, no Alisson, Thiago Schott, I don't think, had a good game either. I'm not even sure Salah was that good other than the goal, which was unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
So how do Liverpool do it?
It's the individual talent, though. I think within a collective structure that whoever you put in that midfield three still works when you have the ball anyway. The problem they had is that when they don't have the ball, Milner and Henderson is just not possible anymore. No, certainly not together. But I mean, poor Fabinho, who maybe
Milner was the wrong call. To start,
yeah, but Henderson.
But you have to start him because
you have to. But in those kind of games, it's just I don't think it's possible with the ball, without the ball. The Pulisic goal is a similar goal to the Lookman goal at Leicester,
yeah,
where you're on that right hand side. There's clearly a lack of communication, understanding between Trent, Henderson, and whoever is your right centre back. Konate in this instance, Matip in the Leicester game. I just don't know. I don't know how they can so poorly defend a goal like this.
I think they're simply undermanned because Henderson's had ups and downs. Yeah. I think at a period where he was playing really, really well. Obviously, he had a very poor game by his standards in this game. Milner, just not the game for him. And when they can't press and they can't retain possession the way they do, they put a tremendous a tremendous strain on their back four. And their back four, which already has issues, obviously no Matip, no Robertson. You can't leave them exposed like that. And on top of that, all those chances that we talked about, most of the time, those were clearances from the back and it was forwards running into space.
Or Trent.
But Liverpool need to create from midfield. That's what they do when they do well. When they do well, they press, they win the ball back high up the pitch, one pass, two passes, and Salah shoots on goal. This didn't happen.
No. And I think Tuchel deserves some credit as well for dropping Jorginho onto the bench. And Jorginho, as great as he's been and as a great mind player and dictating the pace of a game, in a game like this, all you needed was intensity.
But when you have fit Conte...
Yeah,
it helps.
And Fit Kovacic. And that's how you realise watching that game, where would Chelsea be now had Conte... And I know everybody has injuries, so it's a bit far-fetched to see it that way. But still, where would they be if Conte and Kovacic had been fully fit? Conte had played 14 games, played 17 games and missed 14 this season already. And with him, it's such a complete different team. It's unreal.
It's like, I mean, it's not dissimilar to the second half of last season, to be honest with Conte.
Yeah.
Well, everything will improve, though, for Liverpool once Gini Wijnaldum comes over on loan from Paris Saint-Germain in January.
And as soon as Senegal and Egypt are obviously out of Afghan, because without them...
Tough road ahead. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Liverpool and Chelsea. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Ralf Rangnick loses his first game as manager of Manchester United as Wolves win at Old Trafford 1-0. Late magic from João Moutinho. Jules, this was really ugly.
This was bad. It was really bad. It was, I mean, that first half, they could have been 3-0 down after 20 minutes.
Wolves had 15 shots on goal at halftime. How does that happen?
I don't even know. I mean, De Gea has been... a lifesaver, doesn't even come close. First time, by the way, that Rangnick was facing a team in the top half of the table, and the first time he loses. And I think at some point, I know you said, and we said the other day, he didn't have much time to work on things because of COVID, and maybe he's trying to change too many things at the same time. Because don't tell me that by now, we were not supposed to see some improvement. Even little improvements with the ball, I mean... taking Greenwood off yesterday? Why would he was your best player? Why would you take him off?
I guess because I don't know. He wanted to get Bruno on. I had no issue with bringing Bruno on, but maybe you bring him on for somebody else.
Oh, 100%.
And Bruno, of course, did hit the crossbar. He missed an open chance.
They would be better with him.
Cristiano.
Yeah. But that was bad.
Yeah, and so we were going to get pressing and possession.
Where's the press?
We're getting crappy, slow possession, and we get zero press.
Nothing.
He needs time to work,
yeah,
man. Needs time to work.
Yeah. Luke de Jong, that's the bad one. Hits the woodwork twice and scores the only goal as a depleted Barcelona win away to Mallorca. Gab, this was big for Xavi and I guess for bad de Jong.
Okay, first of all, right now he's not bad de Jong.
Well, no,
first of all, he's good de Jong.
That overhead kick. I was like, okay, I will never call you bad de Jong ever again.
Thank you. And you just did.
He missed, so.
I bet it was so good.
I know, but.
Hit the woodwork. I know.
Exactly.
No, I thought it was huge. You had Ricky Puig starting. He was out of players.
Mallorca, crazy team.
Mallorca, tough place to go. They showed a ton of personality.
Yeah.
They came up big. Well done to them.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what. All this talk with Barcelona, we're into this more, like, oh, Morata and blah, 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 and we want to do this and that. You know what? You're not going to play with a genuine center forward anyway, even if you get him.
Yeah.
Keep De Jong on the bench. He's not costing you very much. For those games when you need a bit of size and a bit of heft, would it kill you to have him in the squad? Why is he the boogeyman all of a sudden?
Yeah.
I don't know. Quick update here, Jules. Barca have signed Ferran Torres, but it's anyone's guess if they can register him. And he's now tested positive for COVID as well. Xavi also keeps pushing for Morata, who is on loan at Juventus. This means De Jong's gone, yeah? Like I said,
I think so, yeah. Probably Cadiz. The Morata one, I like him. I can see his qualities. I'm still very skeptical on this one. But, hey... it looks like this is going to happen.
Ferran Torres. This is another thing that he needs to explain. They came out and they said, oh, well, with Ferran Torres, we went and we signed him before we knew whether we could register him or not.
Yeah.
Anybody else we sign, we have to move players on first. Morata makes substantially more money than Luke de Jong, by the way.
Yeah.
And the loan fee, you still have to pay the loan fee, which is pretty hefty in Juve's case. I think it's going to be about $5 million for 9 years in the season.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that?
Memphis has to go. Yeah, I think it's as simple as that.
But
I think it's
extraordinary.
Yeah, it's a lot of changes that
Memphis
Xavi
is now
wants.
The problem. Yeah, okay,
yeah,
got it.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, Gab, if Morata does leave Juventus, could it really be Mauro Icardi? Please come and take him, replacing him, or would they go for Gianluca Scamacca, who we explained in the last show?
Okay, I am not a Juve fan, regular. Listeners hopefully realize that by now, but yeah. I really would not inflict Icardi on them in any way, shape, or form. Icardi
and Wanda,
comes with Wanda and whatever else. Icardi, who makes 1.5 times as much money as Morata when you're trying to save. No. I think they should go with Scamacca. He's going to cost you a lot of money. Sassuolo don't want to sell him now. They don't need to sell him because obviously they got money from having sold Jeremy Boga to Atalanta. If you need Scamacca in the summer, I don't know. Just gut it out somehow.
But if Morata leaves now, they need someone now, right?
I don't think Morata's leaving. I genuinely don't see how Barcelona can make this happen. I think when Morata takes a look at it, he might even have a rethink.
Yeah.
A big boo-boo from Eder Militao leads to an early Getafe goal, and Real Madrid end up losing their first Liga game of the month, of the year, actually. Jules, should Ancelotti be concerned?
Well, I think he should be concerned. It's not the first time we've seen those kind of very sloppy, half-asleep performance from them. Of course, you had no Vinicius. Of course, as we know and we've explained all the time, they struggle more when they have to play against a team that plays really deep, space to run behind.
After 6 minutes, they park the bus.
But still, you can't find a way in. You can't create enough. There's a lack, But again, I think that's what you should be concerned. This is not a long-term concern. They'd be much better, at the weekend, for example. But in those kind of games, it's not the first time that you've seen this.
No, it's not, and that's why he brought on Hazard, trying to spark.
Yeah,
some people thought Hazard would start. We even got you see your pal Marcelo. By the way, he extended his streak, of appearances and losses.
Nice one. Sevilla, meanwhile, win away to Cadiz. Lucas Ocampo's goal gap. They're 5 points back, but they've got a game in hand. Of course, and they got to play Real Madrid at home later in the season. Will they have? So that means we have a proper title race. I don't believe so.
Yeah, you don't believe, and I think Sevilla are short on players. I think they need to get bodies in. I think they need energy. I hate to say, like, oh, tank in Europe, but if they got to play Europa League as well. This team looked absolutely shattered in the season. That said, doesn't change the fact Julian Lopetegui is doing a fantastic job. Yeah, and I'd absolutely love it if we had a proper title race. One which leads us to say, Ay Liga.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Late Rodri goal means Manchester City get all 3 points away to Arsenal. But Jules, Arsenal are furious. Yeah. Not Mikel Arteta, who wasn't there, but Stuyvesant.
Yeah, Albert.
Are they right to be so angry?
Well, it's again about the referee. I mean, sure. For Taylor, we can say that he's probably the best, one of the two best in England. Shoot Atwell has to be one of the two worst. I'm sorry. How did he get a game like this? He's beyond me.
All right. Well, what was wrong? What? The Odegaard, you thought should have been a penalty.
100%.
But you can see how from his angle maybe he was unsighted,
still,
whatever.
Again, go and check. If you don't give the Odegaard, I think then the Bernardo Silva ones becomes a bit more like, okay, you gave this one, and I think there is a minimum... A little foul, but there's a foul, so you can give the Bernardo Silva
a little penalty. Foul on the Bernardo Silva, what?
Yeah, because he's already go down when the shirt is pulled. He gave it for the shirt pulling.
He sticks his big leg
out. He doesn't give it for
him.
The leg. It's nothing to do with the leg.
No.
He gives the penalty for the
shirt.
He
should have given it for the leg alone. I don't think 100% he should have given it for that. And then on top of that, it's a shirt. I don't see why you can complain about that.
I complain in the sense that if you don't give Odegaard, this is really harsh to give the Bernardo Silva. Because there's no consistency there.
There is a reason.
VAR, I know what you're going to say, but
they explained why they didn't give the Odegaard one.
No, I know, but you know that a lot in what referees do on the pitch is also to the words escapes me to as a compensation. A lot of things is compensating what you would have done, maybe not would have done.
It shouldn't be compensation.
They
be compensation.
They do that all the time. You know,
he should have looked at
time.
It. If he had looked he at the Odegaard one, would he have given it?
100%.
Okay, fine. So
exactly.
Then,
but here's the thing, I don't understand.
The VAR, who's the Australian guy, Jared Gillette, who I don't think is bad. He's here, he's new in the country. Well done for him to try to. But there's this climate where, if the VAR refers him to the screen, then he has to overturn his decision. He didn't have to. Gillette should have said, okay, there's not enough me for call it. He should, and I'm not blaming the VAR for this, because this is a stupid instruction that they're given. He should have said, you know what? You clearly haven't seen this incident clearly. There's a lot going on here. If you watch the right replays, you can see that you might want to give the Odegaard penalty or not. I'm going to give you these pictures. I'm going to give you more information. You make the penalty. I think that makes more sense than blaming Atwell. And then you're going to complain about the Gabriel, the first yellow?
The first yellow? What? I'm still not sure what it's for.
Okay, here's the thing, right? Stuyvesant comes out afterwards, says, like, he didn't say anything to the referee. I'm like, I'm sorry, how do you know, Albert? Were you there on the pitch? No, you're not. So
well,
you don't
I
know.
Guess Gabriel said to him, I didn't say anything, or the other boys said to him.
That's fine.
I just think that football could be cruel. It was cruel.
It was cruel. Arsenal were far better.
They played much better. But this is what City do as well.
Can I criticize Rodri as well at the end?
The celebration?
Yeah. You know what?
This is what he does. Don't do that.
It's cheap. It's stupid. You know what? One day somebody's going to throw a brick on you, and it's going to break, and you're going to bust your head open.
The fans were the other side. His own fans.
Yeah, do it in front of your own fans, but never, always respect the fans.
Yeah, I know. And Gab Joao Cancelo started that game and played despite being assaulted by four armed burglars who broke into the home that he shares with his partner and their daughter just the night before. He took to Instagram to call them out as well, by the way.
All right. Well, first of all, Joao Cancelo's got balls of steel. We know the story of people breaking into Duncan Ferguson's house while he was there, and but Joao Cancelo is no Duncan Ferguson. He's got a giant heart. He's got he was there. He projected his wife and family. Thoughts go out to him.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that guy is a man in the best possible sense of the word. Big few days for your boy Killian. He scores three goals against something called Van. And, of course, he's now free to sign with any team he likes. Meanwhile, our old friend, guest on Gab and Jules Meets, Giovanni Branchini, told Gazzetta dello Sport that Real Madrid made a $50 million offer to bring him over this January. Kind of offer I'm guessing they're going to make when they know it's going to be refused.
Yes.
Thoughts? Mbappe tempted? No.
He doesn't want to go. He would not go now anyway. He's very much focused on the the next few months of the season. And then PSG is still hoping they can convince him to stay.
Yeah.
I think it's very unlikely, unfortunately. But yeah, he can sign anywhere he wants. He came back early to training. He scored a hat trick. He was he looks very happy. So good. I'll take that for now.
Right.
I'll take that for now. A late Davinson Sanchez goal gives Antonio Conte's Tottenham a 1-0 win at Watford. Gab, they're 2 points behind fourth place, but they've got two games in hand. They're your favourite for that fourth place, aren't they?
They're not, unless they sign somebody in January. I think they need some creativity again in this game, right? You work with patterns of play and whatever else. And yeah, they did create some chances, but I think they need a bit of unpredictability in midfield. I don't know if you can get something out of Lo Celso or if that ship has sailed, but that's where I would operate in January. But yeah, they're definitely in the mix.
Why not? Of course.
Augsburg signed U.S. center forward Ricardo Pepi from FC Dallas for $15 million, rising to $20 million. Jules, it's a record for MLS, but it's also an enormous amount of money. Forget MLS. For a guy who turns 19th this weekend, that's a huge amount of money.
It's a lot of money. It's the kind of wonder kids money that we can see in Europe. So, you know, it's good that he's coming to MLS. He's clearly very talented. We saw the impact he had with the U.S. national team. Let's hope he can adapt very quickly to the Bundesliga and the different rhythm. And Augsburg, who, by the way, need his goals right now because they're not in the best of positions. So you're right. It's a big gamble to take. I think for him also, so young, and for the club. And
this is more hype than Pulisic and Reina got.
Yeah,
when they came to also because they were younger.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid break their four-game losing streak as they beat Rayo Vallecano 2-0. Gab, Simeone needed that badly, didn't he?
He needed it. What I would like from him, obviously he had a lot of guys out. I would like him to say, hey, look, know how we played in this game. We played a back four. We played far higher up the pitch. We disrupted Rayo's build-up play. We actually pressed. I got a guy who can do that in Correa.
Yeah.
And look, and it worked. And I can have the same God and intensity without sitting deep and being all insecure and weird. Problem is, I think he's got too many players of a similar level, and so he keeps his constant rotation, constant instability. The Africa Cup of Nations kicks off this weekend, and Jules, big absences for Nigeria.
Yeah.
No Victor Osimhen, no Emmanuel Dennis. Not much you could do about Osimhen, who has COVID again, but Dennis's absence could have been avoided.
He looks ugly. I don't know all the ins and everything between the Nigerian FA and Watford. Watford said that they just had a discussion, and then he was allowed to stay with Watford, which I find really
you have to do a pre-selection where you list these are players who could be called up. They didn't put him on the list. Then they wanted to add him. And I
think Watford were very happy to find a way of keeping him here.
No question about it. Not the only team.
Exactly. And sticking with Watford, they're not very popular either in West Africa now because Senegal are accusing them to not have released Ismaïla Sarr.
Yeah, the argument here is they're saying Ismaïl Assar is injured. No, he's not. Well, when will he be fit? And so on. We're not doctors. We're not there. We don't know. I would hope that there are good reasons behind it because I would love to hear from Ismaïl Assar as well. How does he feel?
With the national team and get tested there.
With Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang still on the naughty step, speculation continues that Arsenal might bring in a striker this January. We've had reports of offers for Dusan Vlahovic and Alexander Isak. You had Ollie Watkins and DCL in the mix. DCL, of course, Dominic Calvert-Lewandowski. Anything going to happen in January?
It's too hard, I think. January, Jonathan David from Lille, the Canadian international, is also amongst the list. They like a lot of the things they see from him, too. I think they're going to try with a lot of those strikers that we named and see what happens. January, I think, is too hard.
So if the idea is, let's get somebody in January, if it's somebody we really like and we could get in the summer. But if it doesn't happen, we're okay with Eddie and Alex the rest of the way?
Yeah, unless unless Eddie Nketiah leaves now, so he can get a bit of money. Otherwise, he's a free agent in the summer, like Lacazette as well. So
and then Laka gets injured, and you play Martinelli up front, and he gets injured too.
Aubameyang is still there. He will be back after the AFCON, unless they sell him, which is also possible. Like if someone like Newcastle comes in with a big offer.
With a big offer.
I think then it's even more serious for you to go and sign someone if Aubameyang goes, for example. So I think that's what he's up in the air. If you keep them all, you don't need anyone. Not before the summer, I mean.
If Alba comes back and ever comes off the naughty step.
Yeah. But that's at some point, though. A lot of things in the air.
Did Aubameyang just kind of say, all right, screw this, one game, two games, all right, forget it, I'm just going to go and prepare for the Cup of Nations? That's basically it, right?
Yeah.
So there's no point.
He would not have been involved against City or anything.
We'll revisit this when he comes back.
Exactly. The Premier League's pilot experiment to allow self-standing took off on Sunday at Stamford Bridge. Gab, is the first time since the mid-90s that standing has been allowed or will be allowed in the English top flight.
Yeah, and obviously this comes on the back of the awful events at Hillsborough way back in 1989. They said Premier League stadiums have to be all-seater, but there's been a lot of people who say, no, we want to stand at games. There's been issues where people stand. Even some things, they have signs saying you can't stand.
Yeah,
there's a big thing
fans,
a few years
the
ago.
The away fans are always stood up.
But it was a big thing with United fans years ago where, like, you know, the hardcore goes away and they stand in the away end, and then some clubs, you know, try to make them sit down and they reduce their allocations. Stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Personally, for me, if I'm not covering a game in the press box, or if I'm not, like, in somebody's box, or if there's a little old lady behind me, I love standing. To me, sporting events,
I think, yeah,
outdoor sporting events, you stand to watch.
Yeah.
Same thing if I'm at an NFL game, I will stand. Now, obviously, if there's a little lady behind me who can't see, then obviously, and I'm a tall guy, so fine. But otherwise, to me, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And I think it's finally, they did allow this in other countries. Finally, I think the Premier League's come around to it. You can do it. You can do it safely. They have little bars to avoid those things. Technology has improved. And this is a case of clubs, I think, finally listening to the fans.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Monaco have replaced Niko Kovac with Bruges boss Philippe Clement. Jules, are you surprised Clement would just walk out in mid-season? And what will he bring to Monaco?
You know, I'm more surprised by the sacking of Kovac, I have to say, because they were on a really good run. It was a sort of an up and down first half of the season, but lately they've been good. They finished the year on a high, and the players were quite shocked and I think quite disappointing by the decision of sacking Kovac. Clement, I'm a big fan. We saw what he did with Club Bruges, especially in the Champions League, when they went away to PSG, to Real Madrid, to those kind of teams, and played really well, really good football. They didn't beat them, but it was still really good. So
I'm assuming if they'd advanced, he would have stayed, yeah?
If they advanced to
the round of 16, yeah.
I don't know. He certainly he said that he saw this as a stepping stone, really as a step up compared to Bruges, which I can see. I mean, financially, it makes a lot of sense for him too. So we'll have to see. But I think there's quite a lot of excitement to see what he does in France, to be fair. Meanwhile, Gab, finally, Salernitana has been saved. Well done. Literally, with a few minutes to spare, they will finish the season. A local entrepreneur has taken over the club at the last minute possible on the evening of December the 31st, just before the deadline. Gab, it's not that simple, though.
No, it's not that simple. Again, Salernitana and Lazio, both owned by Claudio Lotito.
Yeah.
He was told you got to sell Salernitana by the summer. He didn't do that. Then he reached some weird agreement again with his army of lawyers saying, oh, no, we're going to give it over to these two trustees who they will sell the club. The trustees happen to be mates of his. I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I'm glad the Italian FA stood firm and said, no, you have to sell the club by December 31st or you're not playing any more games in Serie A this season. Eventually, they found a buyer. This guy from Naples founded some online university. He's only paying, I think, around 5 million euros for the club.
You said there was a bargain to do that.
In some ways, yeah. The difficult thing now is Lotito's already come out and said, well, I bought the club many years ago, and I invested 80 million euros in the club, so he's now threatening to try to extract more money from this guy.
Just let go.
I honestly, you should have never been allowed to do it. Just let it go. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Everton lose at home to Brighton, and the screws keep turning on poor old Rafa Benitez. There's even a campaign for Wayne Rooney to replace him. Jules? Once a blue, always a blue,
always,
right?
Of course. And, you know, he was a proper blue. I don't know if Wayne Rooney is the answer. Certainly doing a really good job at Derby in very difficult circumstances and context. But I'm more and more convinced that Rafa Benitez is not the answer for sure at Everton. There's something is just not working there. He says we have to defend better. Okay, I thought that was your forte, to make a team being solid and defend well. That's clearly not the case. I know they've had problems like everybody else. COVID.
Sporting director left, Marcel Brands.
Marcel Brands left. They just signed a left back in Mykolenko. They're going to sign a right back in Patterson. Good. They're still investing the money, but you have to see more on the pitch, you know. And that was not a good game from them against, as we've said all along, a very good Brighton team.
What I'm not clear on too is, they're in that weird position where the bottom three teams are so far back.
Yeah, they can't go down. Yeah.
They're not going to go down. I mean, they're 8 points clear, I think, of the relegation zone. So they're not going to go down. So part of me kind of says, why don't you stick with Rafa and see if there are signs of improvement between now and the end of the season?
Yeah,
in the way you play, in the environment, whatever.
Exactly.
And then you can part ways in the summer. Doing it now, to me, doesn't necessarily make
a lot
of sense.
Except that the fans are going to get really, really frustrated and really angry. That's not good for anyone.
Yeah, you'd almost think that Rafa Benitez had some sort of past as a Liverpool manager.
Yeah, you're right, with another team, maybe. Christian Eriksen says he will resume proper training next month, which is great news. And Gab, he's a free agent, of course, now that his contract with Inter was terminated. And he's already been linked to a few Premier League clubs.
Yeah, I think we need to remind yourself why he's a free agent, why his contract was terminated. Obviously, he has that heart condition. The rules in Italy say you cannot play on Italian soil with that heart condition. It's considered dangerous. It's allowed in other countries. Obviously, Daily Blind has a similar situation.
Yeah,
he's
Holland,
happily playing away with Ajax. Like, Eriksen knows the risks. He can do, should be allowed to do what he feels comfortable doing, what his family feels comfortable doing. I'd hate for this to be like, oh, look, we can pick up this great player and so on just because these rules aren't in place. I'm not a doctor, but I'm saying the safeguarding exists for a reason. And what happened last summer was so terrifying to everybody that, I don't know, I just don't know how to feel about this.
I know, right? I see what you mean.
Thiago Silva signs a one-year extension at Chelsea, while Antonio Rudiger and Andreas Christensen continue to wait. Makes sense to you, Jules?
Yeah. I mean, for Thiago, it's easy. Either another year or going back to Brazil. He's 37. He decided to stay a bit longer. He's playing at a really good level. I think he's really enjoying his time here, and so is the family. So makes sense for him to commit now.
I wonder if on a day like today with this ridiculous weather outside, he's enjoying it.
He lived in Paris for 8 years. The weather is not much different. For the other two, who are in much, much younger to start with and in very different situations.
And obviously a lot cheaper to extend Thiago Silva, even though he makes more money. It's just 1 year.
Exactly. For the other, it's a long contract. It's a big contract with a lot of commissions and sign-ins and signing on fees and stuff like that. So for Christensen and Rudiger, of course, wait and keep waiting and play the waiting game. Denis Zakaria has been linked to just about everybody else on the planet because he's a free agent in June. Gab, where do you see the Borussia Mönchengladbach midfielder ending up?
It's funny, this is almost like a Sven Botman who is at the situation.
Where
like it seems that like he has an agent, mandates have gone out to everybody. Everybody's talking.
Every country.
I think you're getting a really good player. I think you're getting, obviously a humble, hard hat player. He can play defensive midfield, he can play center back in a situation, he can play center back in a three, I think, as well. I think there's a lot of teams that could use an extra body. He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's looking for a payday, obviously.
Clearly.
But it's a free agent situation. I don't know. It's weird. He's been linked with Manchester United as well. I was actually thinking about this. Having seen them in their last outings, I don't know. I kind of wonder. I mean, you're not gonna pay a transfer fee, but if he would settle for a 2-year deal with an option or something, bring him in now, pay a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be a bad solution, because he's going to be more in tune with what Rangnick wants to do, you know, given the guys he's had with Marco Rosa and Gladbach, than a lot of other players.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Jules, he's talked about him. I need my Sven Botman fix.
Although I haven't checked recently, like, as in lately, I know his agent was very busy, because I think a move in January now is very possible as well. Gab in Thiago Jaro. Lille have a replacement already sorted, and he played really well when Botman was injured for the 2 months between sort of like October and December. It's just they're queuing for him, but I don't.
He's linked to Newcastle as well.
Yeah, which I think, again, everybody is linked with Newcastle
and Milan, obviously.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's, we'll have to see. I think Lille could do with the money now for sure.
Okay, so the thing with this guy is that he's a big boy, right?
He's big,
and he's very comfortable on the ball. There's
and left-footed,
which kind of like a poor man's De Ligt.
Whoa!
Well, in the sense that because De Ligt isn't super like a lot of people.
Very similar to De Ligt. You're right.
He's not going
to
be super quick to begin with, right? Although over time you can make up for it because you got long legs.
Yeah, very similar qualities to De Ligt. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't see the fit at Milan, to be honest. In the sense that I think they'd be best with some quickness back there.
Yeah, but you've got the quickness with Tomori. You can easily have the left foot and comfortable on the ball more than Tomori with Botman.
All right.
Yeah, I think if you get him for 35 million, maybe 40 with ads on, it's a really good deal.
I think we need to continue talking about Botman single show.
And the name is special.
Until he moves on, because he is the Botman.
Yeah. Christoph Piontek has been having a difficult time at Hertha Berlin. And could he really be going back to Serie A and Genoa, where he all started, Gab? That's the only place where he really actually was good.
Really? Yeah. I mean, obviously, it started earlier in Poland, but he wasn't pulling up trees there. And then he had that incredible half season. He's not good.
No.
He's not that good. It's just not his level. I mean, if you want to make a romantic choice and bring him back, and maybe, who knows? Maybe it's the sea air, the minerals.
I don't know.
But I think he's a very limited player. I think he showed it at Hertha, and I don't think he's going to keep Genoa up. If he does move. Huge win for Leeds United over Burnley. And Jules, Marcelo Bielsa got a bit emotional.
I have never seen him. Never, ever, ever. And I might have missed some games, and feel free to remind us other games in the past where he celebrated the goal and a win like he did. Like, I thought he was going to cry. You know, I thought like that hug he gave to his assistant on the third goal was just incredible. Because, you know, you always see him and he's so like, placid, you know, like no much emotions, because that's not what he does. But on this one, I think you saw how much he meant to him and to the whole club, to the fans. It's incredible. They've had a tough times with all the injuries, all the COVID, all the stuff.
Is it weird to you if some people just don't get Bielsa?
Yeah, I don't. I'm a huge fan, so I don't understand. Uli Hoeneß turns 70 tomorrow on Wednesday. Gab is an extraordinary figure, of course, in German football and world football in general. And you had the privilege to going and visit him few years ago. Not when he was in jail. No, it was not.
I did not go visit him when he was...
I was just wondering.
He was in custody for tax evasion. No, this was before that. Look, this guy's just a remarkable guy because he was a phenomenal runaway success as a phenomenal footballer.
Yeah, of course.
Went on... as like a sideline, he has a sausage business.
Yeah,
which was
very successful.
Which was extremely successful. And then obviously the running of Bayern. And, you know, we take for granted that, Bayern have always been a powerhouse. Well, they've always been the best supported team. They've always had success. They've never been a powerhouse to the level that we've had. He's made mistakes over the years, many mistakes. But he's incredibly human, incredibly warm, incredibly charismatic. And yes, I did go visit him. He lives in this big house on this hillside outside Munich in the mountains of Bavaria. And apparently, he did this for me and a group of other people. Apparently, he does this with everybody who goes to visit him. He takes you to this restaurant by a lake where you sit on a terrace. And it was a sunny day. It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And he just starts telling you stories and stories and stories. And you point out, and basically, like, you know, a couple hundred yards away is his house dominating the lake and whatever. He's just one of the great characters, one of the great figures in football. And like, I think he's going to continue to have that influence over Bayern, as well as the 70s.
He cannot not have that. You know, he lives for it.
It's difficult to imagine Bayern without Ernest. Yeah. In fact, more difficult, I guess, because we've had it now for, 9 years now. You know, I never thought I could imagine Manchester United without Sir Alex.
True, yeah.
But then we learned how to do it. And it's pretty grim, isn't it? It's pretty grim, right? I don't want to imagine Bayern without Ole Gunnar. Lionel Messi tested positive for COVID, which is why, of course, he didn't play in the cup for Paris Saint-Germain. But Jules, an Argentine DJ named Fer Palacio got a ton of unwanted attention as a result.
Of course, yeah. Death threat, guards and everything for being the guy who just put the music in the party where Messi was.
He also had his picture taken with Messi.
Yeah, of course they did. Like everybody else. I mean, if you on social media, you cannot have not seen Messi enjoying his time in Rosario during the winter break. And now he's got COVID. I don't think it's Fer Palacio's fault if...
Well, no, but here's the thing. All these lunatic Messi fans went and they start threatening him for like supposedly infecting... He had to go and put out... He posted his PCR test to show he's not infected. Blame me. Bless him.
Axel Tuanzebe is on his way to Napoli on loan. Gab, will he make a difference? And tell us about his world record, which is a very special one.
Yeah, will he make a difference? He's an extra body. There was some talent in there. He's been so unlucky with injuries. Hasn't made his mark at Villa, except for that one season in the Championship. I don't know, but he's an extra guy.
There was no
guy.
One else. They could have...
Six-month loan for a guy to sit on the bench. You can live with it. And who knows? Maybe he'll be the next Chris Smalling. The world record is just an excuse to keep talking
about. Yeah, exactly. That's what
This is so weird. I'd forgotten about this, but apparently 3 years ago, he was visited by the people at Guinness who... And I don't think I'm giving any secrets here, right? If you pay the money, they'll come to you, and then they'll film you with the official while you set a world record for doing something stupid. He got the world record for clearing the entire board in Hungry Hippos.
He did 17 seconds.
He did. Look, it's on the internet. There's a video of him standing next to the man from Guinness.
How long do you think he'd practiced before to do that in 17 seconds?
I don't know. I hope his feet are as quick as his hands.
Do you think he had a training planning on Hungry Hippos? Come on, let's go.
But don't you love that it's old school? Rather than being a world champion gamer, he actually plays Hungry Hippos.
Well done, Axel.
Most of us give up after we turn four. Anyway, that brings us to an end. But Jules, we're going to come back on Thursday.
Oh, yes.
After this unusual Tuesday show, we'll be talking League Cup. Plenty of stuff to go through. So until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.